Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told, taking you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers. And let me tell you this, things are looking up. I haven't felt very much positivity in the past, 15, 16 months, whatever it's been. But right now, things are looking good. I am seeing, when I scroll through my Instagram feed, and you can follow me, at Shane Told and at Lead Singer Syndrome on Instagram, shows are happening. Like, legitimately happening. This is exciting. My band isn't planning on playing any shows till November. Tickets are on sale. You can check that out at silversteinmusic.com. Maybe something will happen before that, but I am just so happy for my friends right now that are able to go out there and play music. And of course, I mean, if you're listening to this, you're a fan of music. You're a fan of live music, I assume. It's very, very exciting. So I got a little spring in my step these days. I'm feeling very good. Canada's even getting it together a little bit. So that's exciting stuff. And I thought I'd bring a little positivity into the conversation to start this out, because sometimes I feel like there hasn't been too much over the past little while. But I'll tell you this, we have a great show today. Brian from Fame on Fire is here. Very interesting band with a very interesting career trajectory. They're doing original music. It's very cool. If you don't know about it, now's a great time to get on board. And I'll give you that in just a minute. Stay tuned. But of course, a little show news. I like to give you the show news. This month, kind of an audio-only kind of month, because I'm very, very busy, and I'm in a place that does not have good internet. However, in the meantime, follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/ShaneTold, because we're doing live podcasts on there all the time, okay? Go there. Follow me. Twitch is awesome. In the meantime, check out some of the great streamers that are already on Twitch doing music. It's not just video games or weird stuff. There is some great, creative, talented musicians on there. It's really, really awesome. So twitch.tv/ShaneTold. If you want to get in touch with me, of course, you can as well. I always give the email address. It's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. I try to write back. I do my best, but I do read them all. So if you got anything you want to say to me at all, feel free. Now, the best way you can help out the show, and people do ask all the time, is to join the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, which keeps the lights on around here, keeps it coming at you week after week, even when I have no internet. And you head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access, and for as little as $6 a month, that gets you in. You get bonus episodes, bonus content, merchandise, access to an incredible community. I love my sinners so much. Shout out to all y'all worldwide. So many of you. It warms my heart. So check that out again. The link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. And also, maybe you listen to these episodes, but you're not sure what this other thing is in the feed. New noise. What's that? Do I listen to that? Do I skip that? What is that thing? Well, if you need to know or want to know, or maybe you don't even really know about the new music that's coming out every week, that's what you want to listen to. Because I got a pal. His name's Mike Howell. He knows more about the current state of music than anybody on this planet, as far as I'm concerned. He just does. He's awesome, and he curates a top five list every single week with the bangers that you need in your life, because there's so much music coming out. It's hard to know where to start. So if you want that, make sure that you're on the new noise train every single Friday. There's an episode coming out. Okay? So get on that. It's just, if you clicked on this, you probably can click on that one next. Okay? So check it out, New Noise. It's a good time. All right. Well, that's good, right? That's a good intro. I like it. Now is time to get into the meat of the show and my conversation with Brian from Fame on Fire. Hey, Brian.
How's it going?
Hey, pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great.
This is nice, man. We were talking a little bit before the stream about our recent COVID vaccines and all that shit, dude. And I was out for the count, man, for the last 2 days. Like, I had it on Sunday, and pretty much all Sunday and Monday, I was like fucked.
Well, at least it only lasted 2 days.
Is that a good thing? I mean, I still don't feel great. Like, but I mean, it's a lot better because yesterday, I couldn't even imagine getting out of bed. Like, I couldn't even get up.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, I mean, like, at least you're doing your part, though. You know.
Oh yeah, man. And like, especially, you know, long term, if we're thinking about touring and all that stuff, like the vaccine I got, which was the AstraZeneca one. They say the next shot isn't for 16 weeks.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so like, you know, 4 months, May, June, July, August. I mean, that's like puts us into late August when I'm supposed to get this thing again to be like fully vaccinated. You know, if we're talking about like you guys are doing shows in September, I see.
Yeah.
Hopefully cross our fingers a little bit, right? But
yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
Right now in the U.S. and the way things are going, we kind of assume that... that it's going to work out that way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, we are. I mean, like, the numbers are looking good. It's just a lot of... I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, younger that just don't want to get it because they don't understand why they need to get it.
Mm.
I want a lot of people to get it really for a selfish reason, but it's so I can fucking tour again, so I can play live shows. Like, these people want to see us. They want to see their favorite band live, but the thing is that's not going to happen if you don't go get your vaccine.
Yep.
Like, that's just the reality of the situation. It's fucked up. I know you might not want to get it. I didn't really want to get it either, but it's what we got to do to get past this bullshit.
Well, I wanted to get it, got super sick from it, and I still would have done it again.
Yeah.
So, hey, that's just me. Anyway, Brian, thank you so much for doing this. You're in a band called Fame on Fire, which I think people are starting to really hear about now. You guys had this kind of had a weird trajectory because, you know, I know in your press statement, it basically says Fame on Fire are not a cover band. But at one point, you kind of were.
Yeah.
So talk to me about how you guys got started down there in Florida.
So our drummer, Alex, guitar player, Blake, and myself, we were in a band prior to being in Fame on Fire. And in that band, I was the lead guitar player, oddly enough.
You got skills there, the shredding.
I did have some skills. I am so washed at these days. I don't play guitar anymore. But it's not like riding a bike. It does go away. But so we moved out to Orlando. We were just hanging out there. And our drummer wanted to do a drum cover of Katy Perry's Unconditionally. And so we were like, okay, cool. At the time, I was recording a lot of different people, doing a lot of different music and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, we can do a drum cover, whatever. So he comes up, he does the drums. And then Blake, our guitar player, it was like, hey, this would sound sick if you threw guitar on it. And he's like, here, check this out. So he does like the whole song and he puts guitar on the whole song. And he just makes it like this heavy pop metal mashup thing. And everyone's like, oh, yo, this sounds so sick. And they're like, yeah, what if we got a singer to sing on this and do like a full-on cover of it? And I look at them, I'm like, all right, well, who are you going to get to sing on this? And they're like, I don't know, you want to sing on it? And I said, no, I don't want to sing on this. I want nothing to do with this bullshit. So eventually, I'm going to keep the story kind of short though. Eventually, they were like, they just kept convinced me to just try and sing on it. Cause I wasn't really a singer beforehand. I mean, like, yeah, I sing in chorus and stuff, but I wasn't a rock singer.
Right.
I didn't sound cool while being a front man. And so eventually they got me to sing on it. We mixed it down. It sounded really, really cool. I developed this like new tone.
Yeah.
I guess of like this like gritty singing that nobody around that time was singing like that. Now everybody's trying to sing like that. But the only person I can think of was like Chester Bennington.
Right.
And so, yeah, we shot a video for it and didn't think a thing about it, released it, and the thing blew up. And then we were like, okay, I guess we have to be a band again. Like, why not? And now I'm the singer of this band. This is weird. So yeah, we were like, okay, we saw success with this. Let's do it again. Let's recreate it again. So we did another cover. Like, I don't know. We were very slow to start, though. We did another cover, I think, like maybe 6 months later.
So what year was this?
This was 2013. Context.
2013. Okay.
Yeah, this is December of 2013.
Okay.
And so then we hit another cover. It actually was probably longer than 6 months. I think it was like August of 2014. We do another cover, and that goes viral as well. And we're like, okay, I don't know what the fuck we're doing, but we're doing something right. Because we never got this, any sort of attention like this in any of our other bands. So I guess let's keep doing what we're doing. Let's build an audience, and, you know, maybe we can release some music. Also, you know, from these massive streaming numbers and these YouTube plays, we're like, we can pay for our own music videos through our band's funds now, which is right. Like, which was unheard of at the time. Because, you know, bands are broke. Let's, like, we're just a bunch of kids trying to play music and wasting all of our time playing music, trying to make it. And so now we had money to use for videos, and we didn't need to spend anything on recording because I was doing all of it. And so, yeah, we just saw, like, how money could come in and pay for what we needed it to pay for. So we're like, let's build, like, I guess a catalog of these cover songs. Like, let's cover these songs in, like, a really cool, unique way. Release them. People seem to enjoy them, and then we can do whatever we want once we have the audience built up.
Right.
So that's really how it started. So then eventually, you know, we do a bunch of covers and we release an EP. The EP does pretty well at the time. And then as we keep going, we're like, okay, let's do cover, original. Because right. we want attention on our originals. So we're going to use a cover to platform that original.
Sure.
So we just kept doing it, and it started really working. I mean, like, our streaming numbers got very, very high. I think even before we signed to Hopeless, we hit almost 1 million monthly listeners on Spotify.
Yeah.
Which is sick.
Oh, I have so many questions. I do want to welcome your bandmate Blake, who is in the chat too. Hi, Blake. He's even reminiscing about how hard it was to get you to sing on that. And I love that we started with that. We started with, well, I'm a lead guitar player, I'm not a singer. That you wouldn't believe, Brian, like, how many people say that on this show. Myself included. I don't think of myself as a singer, even though I've been doing it in a band for over 20 years.
But there's a time it clicks. It does eventually click, and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm being such a singer.
Well, look at the name of the podcast, dude.
Yeah, that's, yeah, yeah.
100%. And we all go through bouts with that, man. But to go back a little bit, you know this whole concept of, you know, rock bands doing covers and stuff, like, of pop songs, this has been going on for quite a while. I mean, a lot of bands have been doing it with Pop Goes Punk and
yeah.
You know, Our Last Night. They obviously turned it into kind of a real thing where they had one band doing it, and they did it really well. You know, so, you know, it must have been hard for you guys starting out, because some people probably looked at it and went, oh, this is really cool. Like, I hadn't heard a band do this before, where other people were like, yawn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I agree with you. But at the same time, I think that we were doing it. I don't know how to explain it, but we were just doing it different.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I don't want to say, like, being cocky or anything like that, but, like, there was definitely something that wasn't so, like, I feel like we gave effort to it where a lot of people didn't give effort to producing these covers, because a lot of people don't give a fuck about doing covers. I mean, like,
yeah,
I've been there. There's some songs that we really didn't give effort to, and it really shows, because, you know, fans can feel that somehow when you don't give a shit about something and you release it anyways. They know.
Yeah, because most of the time when bands are doing covers, like when, and I think I reference Pop Goes Punk or Punk Goes Pop. I always forget which order it's in.
It's in one of those orders.
Punk Goes Pop. I always, you know, most of the bands that do that, those songs, a lot of times it's like, okay, Fearless Records is going to give a band like a couple grand maybe to do a song. They're going to go in the studio. They're going to do it over like a day or two. Like they're going to kind of just shit it out. You know what I mean? There isn't going to be a ton of preparation. There probably will be like not really any pre-production. And most of the time it's kind of like a joke, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So like, and I remember all the ones that Silverstein did, you know, I think the one that we did that we actually did pretty well was Apologize, because we did it with a record. So we recorded into like a super sick console, and like we had a real guy mixing it, and we did it as a part of an album, and it made a difference. So I think, I think that if you guys are taking that approach, I know you guys do it all yourself as well, then that definitely is a big difference maker.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like it's really just like, I guess the energy and effort you put into the song is what you really get back.
For sure. I mean, the other thing is doing videos too. You've done tons of videos for a lot of covers, and you know, the band I remember, and obviously you were doing this, I guess, before they had come to be, is I Prevail, and their Taylor Swift cover that, like, I feel like for a while there on Facebook, I couldn't not see it, man. Like, it was marketed so hard, and like I was seeing this video popping up everywhere. And later I talked to Brian and the rest of those dudes about it, and they were like, yeah, we straight up like poured money into it knowing we were just going to get that money right back out of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy concept.
But I didn't know that.
But I wonder if you had any of the same, you know, thing going on where your videos, because if it's a visual aspect, kind of help put it over the top as well.
No. I mean, like, there was a point when we first started where we were like, oh, let's overthink this music video. And it didn't ever really work out. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, all the video ideas that were like just instant and not overly complicated or anything like that usually do the best. And it's crazy. Like, one of our most boring music videos ever is the most viewed video, which is Hello, where we're literally just standing in some gravel in a field. It's just such a boring video, but it's got like over 20 million views on.
Which song is it? YouTube.
It's Adele's Hello. We did a cover of that. That's the one that really like catapulted everything. Because that was the first like million hit. That was the first one where we were literally seeing us get 50,000 views a day. You know?
Wow. Dayseeker did a cover of that too. That was like really, really good. I don't know if you've heard their version. But
yeah,
there's something about that song, I think, performed in a rock way. It really works.
Yeah, it's a rock ballad. And then one that we're very known for too is EXO Tour Life, which mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As a bunch of people with guns in the music video.
I saw that. I watched that video and I felt like a bit strange watching it. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll do that to you.
Yeah, it did make me feel like a little. Yeah, I mean, it made me. I had so many thoughts about that song. And when I watched the video, and I watched it yesterday when I was in bed and a little loopy on some Tylenol. But I guess, like, first of all, is you decide to do a song, like there's a problem. I this kind of is a general topic for all of the stuff that you do, but I'm going to use this as an example, right? So it's really must be difficult to pick a song because there are so many great songs. There are so many hits all the time coming out. So you choose to do EXO Tour Life, which is, I mean, you listen to the original, it's like those vocals, man, like, it's really hard to kind of either find your own voice within it or mimic. You can't really mimic it, or you just kind of sound stupid. So I don't know how you pull that off. And then the video, yeah, like, you know, we weren't even allowed to have guns in music videos before because MTV wouldn't play videos with guns. So we robbed banks with baseball bats because you weren't allowed to have guns in videos. And now, like, you know, it's intense.
Yeah, no, those were all Nerf guns. But so I guess like the mindset behind it really is, so we were building a second studio in our studio at the time, and I was just sitting there like up early one morning and just like listening to the song on repeat, like the little, it was like the YouTube video of it where like his like face is melting or something. So I was just listening to the song and thinking this would be really sick because like hearing the melody, like, I don't really care if you cry. And I was like, okay, I can hit that, but like way higher up in key. And it would sound so sick.
Right.
And then I hit up, I think I hit up all the boys. I was like, yo, would you guys be down to do a cover of this? And Blake was the first one to like jump on and be like, yo, I would love to do this. And then our bass player was like, dude, this was my idea. And I said, okay, whatever. go play bass somewhere. And then I was like, okay, so we started doing it. We started working it out. And the whole thing's kind of a blackout on how we did it because it came out so sick. I don't even, like, the song came out really sick. And that's one that I'm super proud of. Because I think it was very creative on our end, like the work that we put into it. And just how everything like came about and got structured out, like where the screaming parts were, like how it goes back from screaming to singing. I thought it was just so cool. And then of course, with the music video, all the people in that music video were our friends and clients of the studio. So they go by Damn Mafia, and they would come in, they would record all their music all the time. And I don't remember how the idea got brought up, but I was just like, someone was like, hey, do you guys want to be in a music video? And they're like, yeah. And someone's like, just bring all your guns. And they said, okay, we'll be there. Okay. And they loved it. It was a really good time. It was a fun time shooting that video.
Wow, and, yeah, it's the most American thing ever. Like, I don't even know anyone that owns a gun, I swear. It's just a different style.
Half of those guns were provided by one person. So,
my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we got drunk and just shot the video.
I'm glad you said video and not got drunk and shot the guns. Wow, Brian.
There has been a gun shot off in that studio before, though.
Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't be that surprised.
Yep.
Man. Yeah. Insert Florida man story here.
It was almost one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not that time, but there was a time that someone did. There was another video. So I'll tell you this. So Franz from Attila really liked the EXO Tour Life video. So he thought that he figured out that he was going to do that as well. So he got all the same people from our EXO Tour Life video in our studio too. This was in our studio. It was a video studio and an audio studio. And, he gets all the same people. You know, he's doing this thing for this rap metal group that he started called, like, I don't even know the name of it. But anyways, so they all show up. Same thing again. They all got their guns, and someone shot the gun at the floor, like a shotgun at the floor while they were filming. Like,
jeez, the guns are loaded too?
Yeah, they're loaded.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and so someone shot the gun at the floor and like, you know on a psych wall how it's like just paint layer after paint layer?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can see through like this much of paint layer into the floor.
Well, it could have been a lot worse, man.
Oh, yeah, it could have been way worse.
That's crazy. Well, that kind of sucks. He kifed your idea, too.
Whatever. His video didn't do what ours did, so.
Well, hey, okay. That's interesting. No, I know Franz pretty well. I always have a good time with him, but there's literally, he's one of those people, like, you hear a story about him, you're like, man, it's not that surprising.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
He's a wild dude.
Franz and I would party hard, and no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole time I'll make fun of how he ripped off my idea, but.
There you go. Yeah, and he probably would fess up to it.
He knows. He knows.
Well, yeah, of course he
doesn't give a fuck, though. he looked at our idea and goes, I can do that better.
You know, it's funny. Speaking of pop, punk goes pop. I always say it wrong. Punk goes pop. I saw that you covered Dirty Diana, Michael Jackson classic.
Yeah.
I know, like a long time ago you did it. And it's actually interesting because not really anyone knows this, but a long time ago, Fearless was trying to do a Michael Jackson version of Punk Goes Pop, and they were going to call it Punk Goes King of Pop.
Oh.
And we got enlisted to do it. A whole bunch of bands did. I think Bayside was one of the bands, because this was around 2011, I think, and we were on tour with Bayside, so I remember they were hearing about it too, and this was like going to be a thing. But for some reason, because the whole compilation was going to be one artist or something, there was like weird clearance issues with the covers they couldn't get. but we were going to do Dirty Diana.
Oh,
and yeah. I had an arrangement for it, and I had put together I probably have a demo of it somewhere, like on an old computer or something. So not yeah, it's funny. When I saw you guys covered it, I was like, see that song would work.
Yeah. So, that was one that Blake brought up and I was just like, Dirty Diana. He's like, yeah. I was like, I've never heard this song before. And he's like, no, just listen to it. Just trust me. And I said, okay, whatever. And so, he started doing all the production behind it and riffing on it. I was like, okay, this is actually insane sounding.
Yeah.
And then it's also a fun song to sing too. We've played it live like multiple times now. Cool. And it's a good time. It's a really, really good song to do.
Sure. I mean, everybody knows Michael Jackson like that. You know, I know that's not like one of his biggest hits really, but it's big enough hit, you know?
Yeah. But anytime you do it, usually you get like one guy that was like like if you're playing at like a bar show or something like that, like on like a weird tour, you'll get like one guy and he'll come up to you after the show. Like he wasn't paying attention to you the entire show until you played Dirty Diana. He goes, that fucking song was awesome, man.
Yep.
Well, thanks, man. He's like, what's your band's name again? And then, so you got to talk to the drunk dude at the bar that loves Dirty Diana.
There you go. Well, you know, that you bring up a good point there about that, you know, playing shows live, being a band that obviously you guys are now transitioned pretty much fully into originals. The record Levels came out in September. There's the deluxe edition out now. Everybody should check that out on Hopeless Records. But you know, you got obviously touring. We're a year. It's been over a year since we've done anything like that. So it's a distant memory. But at the same time, like when you guys are playing your set and you've got to decide, okay, we could do a whole thing of covers. We could do a whole thing of originals now. How do you pick your spots, both in what you want to do artistically, and also, you know, you want people to come to see you guys and come back to see you guys again?
Yeah, I think it's just with covers, originals, it's a little bit more, okay, we're going to play the ones that we know are good. We're going to play the ones that we really want to play and that we know fans want to hear. So even it's like singles, like a single like we did called Back to You. People at shows for somehow love that fucking song. And every single time we play it, they sing along to it. So we're going to keep playing that song for now, at least. You know what I mean? It's not the biggest streaming song, but it's one of those live songs that people know. I'm sure you've experienced that before where you're like, okay, the numbers aren't great on this song, but everybody knows this song.
Yeah, well, you know, that's an interesting point. I think like the whole idea of numbers on a song is kind of a new thing, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, we didn't have that at all. You know, we just would play songs and we'd just judge. There was no quantitative number. You just looked out in the crowd, and if people were like feeling it, you're like, all right, we'll play that tomorrow. Or if not, maybe we won't play that tomorrow. You know, and that was like kind of how we did it. And with our song, The Afterglow, which is like the number one, I think our number one song on Spotify, we weren't even playing that live. We were like, oh, it's kind of too poppy. And then we just played it one day to see, and the place like went insane. And we were like, okay, well, we got to play this live. And then it was never even a single, you know? So,
wow.
So like, yeah, it can be strange. The numbers, like, and then once we started playing it live, that's when the numbers started to blow up too. And maybe that was just a coincidence, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's sick. But yeah, as far as like doing covers is concerned live, we will pretty much do anything that's the most relevant cover to our, I guess, how we sound. Our most recent covers, I guess, would be like Blinding Lights, although we wouldn't really do that one live just because anything that's too complicated, we're not going to do. Blinding Lights is a hard song to sing. And so that's not something I'm trying to put myself through. I've already done the way too hard to sing live songs.
Yeah, man.
But it's like anything that really grooves and goes along with the originals. And it's usually going to be like maybe like 3 or 4, depending on how long the set is. If we have like a 30 minute set, it might be like 3 to 4. A longer set, it might be 5. I don't know. Depends on also how fast we blow through songs.
Right. Sure.
Because, you know, live time moves at double the speed and you don't realize it.
It can be weird.
Yeah, but we have this bad habit of just, you know, when we're making the backing tracks and stuff like that, I have this really bad habit of, oh yeah, 1 minute's plenty of time to talk between songs. And it's like, it's really not. And so like a lot of our live sets have just been like song after song after song after song nonstop. And I'm just like, at the end of each set, I'm like, I want to kill myself.
Wow. That's interesting. It is crazy. You know, you talk about making backing tracks and stuff, like not something we talk about very much on this show. You know, and my band doesn't do a lot of backing tracks, but we do play to a click track.
Yeah.
But we do it like we have each song on its own, you know, file. So we just start,
cool.
So then when I'm done talking, it gets started. So you guys do like a whole set?
Yeah, yeah. We have everything planned out. Like everything gets planned out from everything usually starts in Pro Tools. And it's usually right here where I'm sitting. And, you know, we talk about the set, how we're going to do the set, where I figure out where I'm going to talk, where the talking points are. And we kind of just go with that and we play it all the way through. Because I remember years ago, we saw Issues.
Oh, yeah.
RIP to them. And we saw that like it was a Warped Tour. And they were just playing. Everything was just so seamless in their set. And I was kind of like, fuck, I want a set like that. I want a set that everything is just seamless. There's no awkward silence. Because, you know, I'm also in the mindset of like, what do we do if there's like 10 people in the crowd? Hopefully that mindset will go away in these next coming shows. But I mean, like, it will. Obviously, we're playing a festival. But, you know, that's the mindset of like, what do we do? I don't want there to be any silence in the set. So I'm going to develop a set that has, even when there's no song playing, there's going to be music going.
Okay.
Or this is like a talking point. So everything is definitely like set out. So it's like there might be like a 2 minute break between songs that there's a guitar change happening and I don't want there to be dead silence. So I'll have like a little pad going in the background production wise.
Okay.
And so that's really what the backing tracks are consisting of is like, yeah, they're there to complement like with if we have any post-production, which we have a lot of post-production in our songs. And then also just to complement the set and the way everything works. So if we wanted to add a song, which we've done before, if we want to add a song like while on tour, it's a pain in the ass. It's such a pain in the ass to do.
Yeah. So do you run this off a laptop?
Yeah.
Okay.
Run it off a MacBook.
Have you ever had
an entire rack?
Have you ever had an issue with like just something happening? I mean, like the like Pro Tools just crashing because
you know I've never actually had a problem with Pro Tools. Never had a problem with Pro Tools, but I've had a problem with the Apollo systems.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm using one right now, and I know how it can be.
Yeah, so I love Apollos, but like, I've had a problem with the Apollo. Have I had a problem with Apollo systems? I don't know if it was Apollos actually, or if it was like it might have been. We were using not an Apollo, we were using a Focusrite, and the thing you know when you have like a live rack and it rolls around constantly and gets beat the fuck up.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I think that thing just like was taking a beating, and it wasn't built for it. And we needed to swap out and go buy an Apollo at Guitar Center one day because luckily we had a sound check that day. And every time after we get off, you know, the van or whatever, we are checking gear, make sure everything works. And that day the Focusrite was dead. So we had to go to Guitar Center.
Yeah.
Luckily we were in a town with a Guitar Center and we bought an Apollo Twin and ran the rest of the tour off of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you're just going to run a file though, like, couldn't you just run it off anything? Like, run a stereo file and not worry about any, like, gear? Like, run it off, like, an iPod or something?
Yeah, so I took the liberty to make things more complicated for myself. you know how I do. And I started individually, like, stemming out parts in a song.
Okay.
So, yeah. I would hear things, and I'm like, okay, so when we're practicing and stuff like that, I'm like, okay, this like backing guitar part is a little bit too loud. This one string is too loud. This percussion, this hi-hat is too loud in this particular song. So when we're practicing, I'm able to kind of like mix down the stereo file of what I think it should sound like live.
Right.
So it is a stereo file given to like the sound engineer of the backing tracks. But at the same time, I wanted the control to mix it at practice and make sure everything sounds right.
Right. And I guess you have to have like a click track. You have to route it out so you can mix it too, right? For everybody. So everybody
has their own mix.
Exactly. That totally makes sense, right? That you have to have a click track and then everything else. So yeah, that is super interesting. Cool, man. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Not a lot of people want to talk about that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I know. Everybody wants to make it seem like it's all genuine alive. And there is bands out there that, you know, it's all genuine alive that don't even play to a click track. Good for them. But, you know, it's not really about that anymore. It's like, like, go look at a DJ. Like, what are they? Like, they're genuinely playing new music.
Allegedly, right? Like, how do you really know? I mean, I guess I don't know anything about DJing or like that. Like, I mean, if you see someone moving your hands, you can assume they're doing something. I don't know. I guess it's the same with guitar, right?
I think that a lot of people overthink rock music and what it needs to be live. There's a lot of gatekeepers, because I know I've heard about people going, oh, Bring Me the Horizon uses, oh, they're all backing tracks and shit. It's like, who gives a shit? Like, who really cares? You're going there for the experience of seeing this band live.
Mm-hmm.
Go see them live. Like, stop trying to be a gatekeeper. Rock isn't like in this pure form anymore. Like, everybody's trying to sound the best that they can sound. And if this is what they need to do to sound great, then let them do that. Like, this, they want to be great for you.
Okay. I mean, I don't think you're completely wrong. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, for sure. I think it's like weird though for me. I guess I'm older. I don't want to say that I'm a gatekeeper because I'm not. And like, I think it's fine when bands, you know, they want to pull something off live and they do. I think being open about it is important though. You know, like
totally.
I thought the funniest thing I saw, you brought up Issues, so I'll bring up this story. It was also Warped Tour, but Issues just jumped on for a couple days. They were on a smaller stage. This is, I think, before the first full length came out. This was like 2013 maybe. And so they're playing. This is when like Scout was still in the band. So they're playing, and AJ breaks a string before the second last song, low E string. So like, you know, it just pulls it off. So it's just dangling, right? So he leaves the stage and goes to like, I guess, to go get another guitar. Like, they don't really have crew or anything. So he goes back onto the grass to like, I guess, get a guitar to play. But like you said, their set is it's just on Pro Tools. Like, it's playing and they can't stop it or whatever. So he's like, you know, it's a talking break. So I don't know, Tyler or Michael are talking, but then he like comes back. And like something's wrong, and then the song just starts, and the song starts with a guitar riff, but like no one's playing that guitar riff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, we don't do that. Luckily, like there will be like a lead in the background that's impossible for Blake to play,
right?
Like, it's just an ambient thing, but like no, we're not doing that.
Right, like a main intro lead, like intro rhythm guitar.
Yeah,
and then he came, and then the funniest part was like, I guess he couldn't find the guitar. He came back with the guitar with the string gone and just like rocked out till the end of the set. Like, hey, I guess, what are you gonna do?
We use backtracks in a sense to complement what we're doing, like as far as just production goes. But like, if I'm singing out of key, you're gonna notice. It's like that's me singing out of key. If our drummer fucks up, you're gonna hear it. Our bass player, if we fuck up, you're gonna know. You're gonna know we're fucking up.
Right. No, for sure. And that's the thing. Like, I don't care. Like, even if a band wants to use AutoTune live or something like that, it's like, okay, use it. But you know what?
I've tried it. That shit's impossible. I don't get it.
Okay. Well, I know there are bands that do it. I mean, I don't care. Just if you're gonna do it, like if someone asks you, say you do. I mean, you know what I mean?
Why not? Why not? I know. People use AutoTune live. Like, they'll use it through Apollo. Actually, like Post Malone uses it, runs everything through Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a guy there that literally manually does it because for some reason it won't lock up to MIDI, and so he has a person that changes each key of each song every single time.
Yeah, yeah. Just exactly. That's not very hard to do. That's just a setting.
No, I don't know.
I mean, you can also turn off, you know, you can put how hot you want the auto-tune on, right?
Yeah, yeah,
if
totally,
you want that
totally.
Effect, you know, or if you just want it to be just sound natural, you can do that.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, I've tried the auto-tune thing. I just wanted to like test it out and hear it. And it was just it doesn't work. It also messes with my head. I cannot sing with auto-tune on. I feel like disoriented. I don't know.
Well, you can do it so you monitor. You could have it monitoring your actual voice. And later in the chain.
I'm good. I don't think I need it live.
I'm good too. I don't use it either. I just I'll never forget when Fall Out Boy said like this. I think it was from Under the Corkscrew. And when they said like, oh, there's no autotune on this record. I'm like, bullshit. Like, there's fucking autotune.
There's no autotune, but like, Melodyne? Oh, we used a humbling amount of Melodyne.
Right. Yeah, it's like
no autotune. This is all Waves tune.
Right. Autotune, different. Like the brand. Like, no. I don't. Yeah. I've never used Kleenex in my life, but I use
tissue.
Yeah, tissue. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
those like brand name autotune, because people don't know autotune is a brand name, I guess, of Antares or whatever. Anyway, man, we're going way off topic. I do want to talk about your new record a little bit more, Levels, because it's out now. And it's on Hopeless Records. Great friends of mine. My band put out a few records on Hopeless. I love those people. Talk to me about the decision to go down that road and actually sign a deal with a label rather than doing it yourself like you had been.
Yeah. Okay. So it wasn't one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, let's sign to a label and this is great. We need a label. It was one of those things where it's like, we felt like we needed a label to help push us further and get some doors open that we couldn't open ourselves. Because when you're a independent band, not with an independent label, but just independent, people don't really want to talk to you because
right.
You almost don't have that co-sign by a label. And, you know, Hopeless is one of those labels where they're respected. You know, they're respected for, you know, being fair to their artists and just being really, really cool people overall. Yeah. And so we were like, we want to work with a label like that, an independent label that, you know, isn't owned by a big label and isn't going to like shelve us or do anything fucked up to us. So, you know, we ultimately decided to go with Hopeless, but it's because, you know, they had a lot to offer us as far as marketing goes, as far as, you know, press, radio. These are all these things that we couldn't do ourselves at the time, at least. Like, we had no idea any of this stuff. We needed new merch designs and more merch, and it wasn't so much of a money thing, but it was more of a, yo, we really need your help opening the door. We need to be able to get like really good tours because nobody wants to talk to us. So how do we get them to talk to us? By signing with a label.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's absolutely true. And then once you're on the label and you're like, shit, like we were making way more money before. Like, you're taking a pay cut essentially, at least in the beginning, hoping to grow. But, you know, a lot of people don't understand the amount, the level you have to grow in order to kind of recoup that cost is a lot. Not to mention you have to kind of put money away because you're not going to see a royalty statement for like a year after you sign, at least, you know, and things like that.
Yeah, I don't know where your mindset's at with labels, but like, if you don't have to sign to a label, you shouldn't. That's where I'm kind of at. But if you feel like it's the best move for your business to do, then go right ahead.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with who your band is too, and how you guys might operate. Some bands, they need a label to help market because they don't know the first thing about that side of things, and they just wouldn't be able to take on the whole, you know, the whole chunk of like, this is how we sell a record. Like, they just don't know how to do that. A lot of people are more musicians than business people, but it seems like you guys have kind of a good, you know, a good aspect of both.
Yeah. We know both. At least now we do. But you know, it made sense for us to sign. So that's really why we did it. It really made sense for us to sign. It made sense for us to, you know, develop a first album through Hopeless and hopefully going on to the second album. So
yeah, that's awesome. No, and I noticed that there was a feature from Trevor from Our Last Night on the record, and obviously a band that you guys are getting compared to a lot. it makes sense. I mean, to put it there, to put him on the record, was that like a bit of a cosign too? To show everybody like, hey, look, if you're telling us that we're ripping this band off, like, they're cool. They're cool with it. Like, we're in the same world. We're friends. And, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it was anything negative. I think it was really just one of those things that like a bunch of people were like, yo, can you guys please do something with Our Last Night? And there is the comments of, you guys are ripping off Our Last Night off, or Our Last Night did it better, or, you know, some some of our fans will go to their video and be like, Fame on Fire did it better, and like, and just those people need to shut up. It's not about doing it better. It's really not about that. It's about, it's about, you know, collabing and just, you know, having a like fun competition, not like anything negative. So getting Trevor on the song, you know, we were in talks with Trevor for a little bit before we even got him on the song, and so we were like, and basically said, yeah, I would love to do it. So we're like, yo, this is awesome, let's do it. And then we also proposed to do a cover of WAP with him, and he told us to fuck off.
Well, I mean, I've met Trevor a couple of times. He's actually never been on the show. I'd love to have him. But did he give you guys some advice? You know, maybe they made some mistakes or anything in the past, like what to do or not to do?
No, I don't think he really gave us any advice. I know Trevor has said before, don't ever sign to a label. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it's like, you gotta, it depends on your situation, if it's a good idea or if it's not a good idea.
Well, and they were on a label too. Like, I mean, if you want.
Yeah, they were signed to a label.
Epitaph. I think, I don't know how many records they put out on Epitaph, but, you know.
Like six?
Yeah, like they had a whole career before they decided to do kind of what, you know, the cover thing. And you guys started there. So it is a different trajectory. And I think you're in good hands with Hopeless. They're good friends of mine. And hopefully, yeah, man, you can bring this music to the masses. And you've already had some success with Her Eyes, number one on Octane. That's a huge feat. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's wild, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you think about these things as like a kid growing up in the scene. You're like, oh, Octane would be so sick to be like on or whatever. And then you're just there and you're like, okay, this is crazy. All this shit's happening. This is all crazy.
Yeah.
But it's sick. I don't know. I'm excited to get back on the road though, because like we haven't played a show in over a year before all this Octane shit, before all the radio campaign, before the album. Like, who knows what's gonna fucking happen next? Like, well, I'm really excited.
No, I see that March 12th of 2020, you guys were in Virginia. It was your final show. What was that like?
Actually, our final show was in Jacksonville.
Oh, okay. It's not on your setlist.fm, but
yeah,
so you did a final show going back up home to Florida then, I guess.
Yeah. So final show was in Jacksonville, which is like 6 hours away. Yep. The Virginia show was tight though. That was great.
So but at that point, right, because we were in the same boat. We were in North Carolina. When we got shut down, our last show was March 11th. March 12th, we had a day off. That's when we decided to go home. I imagine that playing that last show in Jacksonville was probably like a bit weird, right? When people, like a lot of bands are canceling, do we do it?
Yeah, no, we sat outside the venue. We got there at like 11 a.m. early as fuck. And we sat outside the venue just going, what are we doing? Like, are we playing this?
Yeah.
The governor of Florida, or the mayor of Jacksonville is like, I'm shutting down all gatherings over, you know, 50 people or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all just sitting there. It's like, yo, do we just drive home? Because we're literally like 4 hours away from home. Or do we play this show? Like, I don't know what's going on. Our tour manager's trying to get the promoter on the phone to find out if this show is actually happening or not. But, you know, I guess the show was going to happen. So we were like, okay, cool, whatever. So many people showed up to the show. This was one of like our most packed shows of this tour. And so it was wild. It was a wild show, and I don't know if people knew that everything was coming to an end, so people went crazy, but it was a crazy fucking show. Like, it was so
maybe,
packed,
dude,
in this room.
Maybe. No, it is just like an example of fucking worst timing ever, though, right? Like, you guys are, I mean, I don't know if you guys had the record done yet or when it was supposed to come out, but like, you know, you guys are just on this trajectory upwards, like you're headlining these shows, right? So like, you're building your audience, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope, like right when it's about to pop. So now it'll be really interesting to see if this last, you know, year, let's just say, is like kind of a reset. If you're going to go back to March 12th of 2020, and that's like where you're starting, or if like you've grown so much that like you, all of a sudden, hey, like we're playing a fucking 1,000 people here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That'd be crazy. You just don't know.
No.
You really don't know.
No, like you can look at the numbers all you want, right? But like, you don't really know until you're putting tickets on sale, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Numbers, online numbers only mean so much. They really, really do. If you're known to be a touring band, people are going to come see you tour, or you're going to get like put with people who, you know, have good numbers and you're going to tour with, and you're going to, a lot of people are going to show up to the show and then love your band. But we have genuinely no idea where the hell we stand. And it was a weird year because we got numbers on Spotify and stuff like that. But like, are people going to come see us off of those numbers? That's not always guaranteed. You know, we've had over, I think like 500,000 monthly listeners on Spotify for years now, but there's bands with 100,000 monthly listeners that pull way more than we
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Because they're known for touring.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the monthly listeners thing has become a number that everyone seems to point to for some kind of success. But you're right, there are bands with well under a million that are like massive. And some like, I think the other day I was looking them up, and Nine Inch Nails, like huge band, plays arenas at least all over the world. They only have 3 million monthly listeners. Nine Inch Nails. Won an Oscar, you know, on Sunday.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's like Tool. Like Tool doesn't have that many monthly listeners, but
they don't. Yeah,
arenas.
Yeah, and yeah, like, I'm right. I'm gonna look up Tool. I'm curious about Tool. I didn't think about them. Yeah, 3 million as well, and they're one of the biggest rock bands in the world. So yeah, it really isn't everything.
Yeah, it isn't. But you know. Maybe in 15 years it will be everything, but as of right now, it's not.
Yep, it's not. Well, dude, what else to tell me? I mean, you guys are going back out September. Are there any other tour plans you guys have?
I can talk about.
Like you're figuring out next year if it's going to happen and all that. It's crazy, right? You have these meetings with agents. It's just all doom and gloom.
Well, we got a new agency this year, which was
good.
Great. Which was great. UTA, shout out to them. They're fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah. And they've been treating us so well. There's cool things that are happening, but I just can't talk about them because nothing's been announced besides the show in September.
Well, dude.
The big old festival.
Dude, well... what else to tell the people? I mean, the new record is out now. Levels on Spotify, wherever you get your stuff. There's tons of videos to watch.
Yeah, there's content for days. You guys can follow us on TikTok. I don't know if you guys should do TikTok too.
This is what everyone's telling us. We had a little meeting with our label, and they were like, "We're not saying like get TikTok, but get TikTok."
Yeah,
we're like, I don't know.
It's free. It's free. It literally, there's millions of fans waiting there, hungry for content.
Yeah,
they need your content, and they just want it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be like the Steve Buscemi meme with the skateboard. Like, hello, fellow kids. You know, like
why not?
I mean, I kind of am like that. That's just me. if you want to sum up a dude, I shouldn't even be mad about it.
But so like it's like a thing where it's like we never took it seriously either. Like we kind of looked at it like, oh, it's fucking some Zoomer shit, you know?
Right.
And so we weren't really taking it too seriously, and we weren't really doing anything with it. And then we started posting about 3 weeks ago now. We started posting just almost daily like little covers of things, like whether it be like a 3 Days Grace song or it's a screamo version of Astronaut in the Ocean. Doesn't matter what the song is, but we've just been posting little snippets of like 15 to 20 seconds, and we've gotten over 100,000 followers now.
Holy
in 3 weeks. Yeah.
Wow. 3 weeks. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really insane.
And then it translates. So it's like the people that are on TikTok and they're like, oh, you guys sound really good. You got a really cool voice. What else do you have? And so now everything else starts going up. And so then you start getting people that are hitting you up all the time saying, you guys are sick. I found you guys through TikTok, this and that. So it's a lot of people are discovering music through TikTok, you know? I know this girl that blew up off a voice memo on TikTok. She's got 700,000 monthly listeners off a voice memo. Her recording is a voice memo.
What's so compelling about it?
It's just like it's a good song. Like she's a great singer, fantastic singer.
Oh wow.
And it's just like, it's an emotional song, but it's a voice memo.
Hey,
she,
I love that.
It's got 7 million plays on Spotify.
Well, that's so cool, though.
You're like, this is the power of TikTok. It's so powerful.
Wow. That's like, awesome. Well, definitely, yeah. Follow Brian and Fam on Fire on TikTok. Go do it. And yeah, man, thank you. Thanks for this conversation. I really enjoyed it. You're so open and honest and forthcoming. And, you know, I love to pick the brain of, you know, someone that's like out there doing it, really focused on their art and their passion. So thank you, Brian.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you.
Can I play a tune for the podcast side? Play a tune for the people. Do you have a favorite from the new record?
Oh, yeah. Her Eyes.
Okay. That's easy. Got it. Done.
You held me down and took control. You told me count my blessings. You took advantage of my soul. I should have learned my lesson. But I'm so messed up.
So there it is with Brian. Loved it. I told you this was an interesting one. Very different. I wish Fam on Fire so much success with everything they're doing now, doing these original songs and absolutely killing it. And hey, like I said in the intro, things are coming back. I haven't checked on Fam on Fire tour dates, but I can only imagine they are coming at you. So get on that, and I think it's safe to say it's a great time to start buying tickets for shows, because I think they're going to happen, and get them while they're hot, because a lot of shows are going to sell out. Well, I'll leave you with a tune. Oof, I don't know what to pick. I'm going to go with Headspace, though, okay? Here's Headspace from Fam on Fire from their new album, Levels. on Lead Singer Syndrome. Smash that follow button, okay? And I'll see you next week.
I found.